All right, real quick, people, before we get into today's show, we've just released a new course, Periodization for Periods, all around how to train women around their monthly cycle, and we've got it on special. If you're interested, click the link in the show notes.
You are now listening to the Fitness Education Online Podcast, the podcast where fitness professionals go to grow their fitness business. If you're in the fitness industry, you'll find tips and strategies from proven business experts. Now, let's start the show.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the course. Welcome to the Fitness Education Online Podcast. I'm your host, Jono, and I am super excited because we have an absolute rock star on the line this week. Now, I know I say that about every guest every week, but this person actually is. If you check out her resume, what she does, she supports coaches and athletes to optimize their health and performance outcomes. She's an advocate for healthy eating, for eating disorder prevention, treatment, and recovery. She's currently doing her PhD. I believe she's almost finished it. The topic is managing the risks of eating disorders, disordered eating, and relative energy deficiency in sport, known as REDS, amongst athletes. So without further ado, let me introduce the one and only Jennifer Hammer. Jen, how are you?
Yeah, I'm going well. Thanks, Jono.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, give us a nutshell. I know I read out a whole heap of different words there. Let the listeners know, simplified version, what is it you do? Who do you help? How do you do it?
Okay, so thank you for that really lovely introduction. What is it that I do? So as you said, I'm currently doing my PhD. I'm in my last few months at Griffith University. And a lot of my work has centered around, as you mentioned, this condition REDS, which is relative energy deficiency in sport, which is a health concern that we recognize in elite athletes, recreational athletes, but also now it's becoming more prominent in your everyday exerciser, probably more so because they don't have as much of a support team around them. And essentially the condition is where an individual's energy intake doesn't match their expenditure. So what that means is the body will prioritize that energy for movement, for exercise, and subsequently a number of health systems or physiological systems in the body will be negatively impacted. And this can stem from things like bone health, immune function, gastrointestinal health, and then it will also lead to reductions in sporting performance, increases in injury risk, losses in muscle gain, or just not adapting to the training like an individual would want to or should do. Now, a lot of my work has centered around supporting coaches in this space, because what we identified with my research was that coaches were getting minimal education in this space. Sadly, a lot of coaches were creating environments which were potentially contributing to issues around disordered eating, eating disorders, which can lead into REDS. And so we identified that there was a real gap. Coaches needed support. They didn't need lecturing for doing the wrong thing. They needed that support to help them to know, how do I create an environment that actually mitigates risk? How do I know what I'm looking out for? So how do I identify among an individual or among my athletes in any individual who might be at risk? And if I do identify someone at risk, what's my next steps? Because the coach isn't there to solve the problem. So it's about identifying it, and then who do I refer to? Who's in my support network that I need to reach out to help this athlete? And then it's about staying connected. So I built, along with Swimming Australia, we built some coach workshops and resources which we delivered to coaches, and we're now writing up a couple of papers around that, about the process we went through, and the impact that we were able to have with the coaches on that workshop.
Awesome. Love it. Now, I want to dive into your story, Jen. But just before we do, I've got a quick question. Just in terms of that referral side of things, you know, if someone, and you can answer this whether it's a sports coach or a personal trainer, I'm guessing the answer might be the same. In terms of who to refer them to, is it a special sports dietitian, or can any dietitian deal with REDS? What's just the quick answer there?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of nuance, and the reason I say that is because someone can develop REDS through different pathways. Say we've got an individual who has a really healthy relationship with food, they're nothing's off limits, healthy relationship with exercise and their body, they may develop REDS unintentionally.
Gotcha.
Which genuinely means they're just not aware of how much food they need to consume to meet their expenditure. Now, when we've got that individual, it's normally a lot easier to treat because we would, as you said, refer them on normally to a sports dietitian because they've got a bit more aware of REDS, but some dietitians are. But it's always a really good idea to check with the dietitian that we're referring to. Are you aware of REDS? Do you treat people with REDS? Have you got knowledge of REDS so that they know what they're dealing with?
Gotcha. Just a quick question there. Will most dietitians be aware of it? Is that a common thing that you're not a sports dietitian, just an APD or you know, a red accredited dietitian?
Yeah.
Is that okay. So it's not like an expected thing that every dietitian knows it. Okay, there you go.
No, because I've also got a friend who's doing a PhD at Bond in this space, and she did an assessment of dietitian's knowledge of REDS, and it was quite poor. Sports dietitians are definitely on it. We would recommend dietitians over nutritionists, and that's no disrespect to nutritionists. It's just dietitians have been through a much more lengthier process in their degree where they cover the real biochemical chemistry stuff. They cover a lot more within that degree process. And so they obviously have a lot more expertise in that space. So definitely a sports dietitian. Now, when it comes to the other route into REDS, it's more complicated. So this is an individual who would have a psychological component attached. So there may be a form of disordered eating there. There may be an eating disorder present. So as you can imagine, just sending that individual to a sports dietitian is going to be largely ineffective if there's the psychological barrier there. The dietitian can tell them, we need to change your diet here, we need to increase here, and they're unlikely to follow that advice if they're battling this eating disorder or disordered eating issues. So we often then need to get a psychologist on board who specializes in disordered eating, eating disorders, and then we need to have a bit of a team going. So you've got the sports dietitian there. You've also got a psychologist working alongside as well so that we can really get that individual moving forwards.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense. And I guess this might be a tricky one to answer. Say as a personal trainer, and you might get into this later, how do we kind of determine, or I say a personal trainer, would it even be a GP as the first stop, and then the GP can decide a bit more? Okay, cool. This is more a psychologist issue. This is more a dietitian issue. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so I do empathize for people like personal trainers who recognize this, because obviously there isn't a support network around most individuals that they work with. So it can be challenging because GPs themselves aren't very well educated. And this is one of the big barriers we've got at the moment in terms of.
It's like the blind leading the blind, right?
Yeah. And it was actually really interesting because when I was doing my PhD, we were all sat there and we were like, who should we target? Who are we going to target? Coaches, GPs, parents, dietitians, like we literally could go for any of them. And we chose coaches because of their exposure to athletes in the first place. But there is a need across all of these populations. And maybe I can go to the next one next. Let's do a postdoc with GPs or something. I don't know. But so what I would say is the personal trainer is probably a good idea, refer to that GP. So get the individual to go to the GP, and if they are aware that they have got REDS, even speak to the GP and say, I know that this is what I've got. I need to be referred to X. Now, in terms of the identifying whether there's a psychological component, that is something the GP can do because they have an eating disorder frequency questionnaire. And if the patient presents with enough symptoms or presents, they tick enough boxes which would meet the criteria, they will then get access to psychological treatments and dietetic treatments on a care plan.
Nice.
And I've known a number of people who've actually been referred on to that, and it's been really helpful because you get this access and you do get to choose who you go and work with. Outside of that, it's if a personal trainer, it's kind of, you can kind of tell when you're working with someone, if you're confident to have some of those conversations in sort of a confidential scenario, where you maybe find out that they're struggling with their relationship with food. And as soon as you've got that inkling, then you know that there's a psychological barrier. The ones who are unintentional, it's genuinely very easy to pick up. So it's challenging. If in doubt, my first step would be refer them to see go and see their GP. And at least that's getting the ball rolling somewhere.
Okay, makes sense. Well, I'd love to hear your story, Jen. I believe you've got a quite a powerful story about how you got into this space. Let's hear it. Start where you want to start and let's hear it.
So I myself, when I was young, was sport mad. And I was a very talented little athlete growing up. And I actually had two sports which I excelled in. That was one was running. That was always my first sport as an athlete. And then I was a cricket player as well.
Just quick question there. Did it upset you that Australia would always beat England at cricket every year, or
Let's take a quick break.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
At the time, yeah, but now I kind of I like because I live here and I'm like I feel like I can support both teams now. It's kind of cool.
Whoever's winning, right?
But yeah, back when we were in the UK, we weren't too happy about that. So anyway, sadly, at the age of 12, I moved from an environment where I was in a very small school, and I excelled at everything. I was the best in class, the best at sport. And I learned that I thrived off that praise that I used to get. And I think from a very young age, I kind of validated my worth through that external praise, that external validation from significant others telling me that I was good enough. And I moved to an all-girls grammar school where I was suddenly in a massive environment, and there was people that were better at running than me. There was people that were better in class than me. And all of a sudden, I wasn't getting that praise. And as a young 12-year-old girl, I didn't know how to deal with the emotions of not feeling good enough. And it's around that time that you're kind of exposed to diet culture as well. And I developed, well, I initially said to my mum I wanted to eat healthier. And I decided that I was going to cut out chocolate. And then after a week or so, that wasn't good enough. And then I would cut out crisps and sweets and biscuits and any food that was societal labels as kind of unhealthy. And it got out of hand. And then at age 12, I was diagnosed with anorexia. And I was put into outpatient treatment and I made what I would term a functional recovery. So by the time I was 14, I was eating, and I was adhering to what the dietitian was asking me to consume. But I was still training at a very high level with my sport. And this was where I would then say that I had a overlap here of REDS and an eating disorder, because I had all of my eating disorder symptoms were still present. I had one menstrual cycle when I was 12. So this is the really important thing that will come present throughout my story when I get to the end of it. So I was training without a menstrual cycle. And I guess I was always one of those who you could tell I wasn't right, but I was functioning okay. I appeared to be happy. And my parents were just trying to do the best that they could for me. And so I continued on my way and I was doing well with my sport, but I would always get injured. Like I would win races and every few months I'd pick up an injury or I'd pick up an illness. But we carried on and battled my way through, and I actually got to a pretty high level. I represented Great Britain at club level in Serbia.
Cricket or running?
This was all for running. So running. I was a county cricket player. And then I went over to Serbia, raced for Great Britain for my club. And then I went to university, wanted to pursue my running career. And I was subject to a case of bullying. And this was where I really slipped back. I was like, I needed to gain control over something. So the first thing I resorted to was food and exercise. So everything kind of became a bit dark again. And over the, my parents pulled me out of uni after 4 months because they could see that I was going into a very dark place. The next few years were literally just an existence. It was not any life at all. I was just going into a really dark place with an eating disorder. And then when I was 22, so this was 2015, I was admitted to an inpatient unit. I was 28 kilos in a very dark place. And I was in the inpatient unit for about 8 months. And then when I came back out, I was sort of in this weight restored body. But psychologically, I was still battling. But I knew I didn't want to fall back into that place that I was. I wanted to go back to sport, but I needed this control. And so I then resorted to extreme healthy eating and rigid exercise regimes. Now, this is what's termed orthorexia now. It's where there's sort of this obsession with eating healthy foods, and there's lots of foods which are off limits, a lot of obsessions around body image, training, and it becomes very rigid that your whole existence revolves around that. And I was in that for a couple of years before I actually reached out to the most incredible lady called Renee McGregor, who is a specialist in the UK in REDS and eating disorders in athletes. And she was the one individual who really helped me delve into the deep stuff around this, all being around worth, and an individual who clearly never felt good enough in a world where she didn't feel safe and she didn't know how to deal with those emotions. So food and exercise and controlling her body was a way that she managed to do that. Now, I hadn't had a menstrual cycle still. So I'm now 25 years old. I was between the ages of 12. I was now 25. I've come out of hospital thinking that I could just return to sport. I had a diagnosis of severe osteoporosis of my bones. And I developed a chronic pain condition. Now, the severe osteoporosis for me is the real one I want to flag, because this is what's destroying athletes, recreational exercises. That's what's destroying their participation in sport, because without a menstrual cycle, we don't have enough estrogen in our body, which is building our bones. So, and especially during those developmental years where I was teenage years, where we lay down all of our bone density, I was losing. So by the age of 25, I had the bones of an 80-year-old. Now, it didn't mean anything to me. I was like, oh, that's fine. I can just reverse all of that. And I remember I tried to go back to doing a bit of sport. Initially, we went back to the cricket nets and I was just hitting the ball. And I felt this real bad pain in my lower back. And I was like, wow, this, I can't walk. We got a scan and I picked up a stress fracture in my sacrum, literally just from and then I managed to pick up one in my shoulder from at the gym. I was just punching a boxing bag, like, and so they had to put me on hormone replacement therapy because they couldn't see me just keep running. Okay, so they put me on hormone replacement therapy and I was on that for a few years. And I guess I realized I was feeling lost without my sport and I just felt I needed to do something to help others. So I put myself into the space of research. So I went and got my undergrad degree in sports science and I then did a master's degree in eating disorders and clinical nutrition at University College London. And I guess I wasn't done. So I then out on a whim started applying for PhDs. And I got one here on the Gold Coast in Australia. And interestingly, I'd applied for a PhD, which wasn't in my area that I was interested in, but the supervisor who I wanted to work with, had this PhD opportunity. So I kind of had this little plan that I was going to apply for it. And if I got it, I'd then ask him if I could change the topic. And it was so cool because he was really on board once I told him what I wanted to do and I wanted to work in the area of Reds and eating disorders. And so, yeah, I guess it's my passion now because I've seen not just for myself, but I've seen in so many others how their lives have been so impacted through both eating disorders and Reds, because a lot of the time Reds crosses over into that psychological component. And obviously I've come out to Australia and I'm on this hormone replacement therapy and I'm like, what the hell? I've got no support team out here now. In the end, I just stopped and I actually got a cycle back 2 years ago. Now, I actually just want to mention this to, especially for the personal trainers that are on, like, listening today. So I was, as I mentioned to you, diagnosed with severe osteoporosis. Now, getting my menstrual cycle back and engaging in healthy behaviors with food now, and making sure I'm always eating potentially in a surplus for me. I always have to make sure that never training fasted. I've always got to have enough energy on board and weight bearing exercise. I actually last week had an updated dense bone density scan. Now my spine, I'm so proud to say, has almost reversed entirely out of osteoporosis. My hips aren't responding as well, so we need to kind of see if we can get a little bit more stimulus going through my hips. I'm injured at the moment, so we can't, but when we can, hopefully we can get that. But I just guess I want to say that because I was kind of told that you're past the age of 30 now, you can't really change it. And I was like, I'm not buying that. Like, I want to change it. And so I guess it's just saying that, like, the menstrual cycle is key, like, in terms of recovery. Like, without that, my bone density wasn't moving. That was the first thing, getting that back. And the only way I could get that back was making sure that my energy availability was high enough. So, like, it terrifies me when I see, especially women, going to the gym or going training first thing in the morning and they haven't eaten, because we really know for women, fasted training is just terrible. And I've seen a number of people who have literally lost their menstrual cycles. And Renee McGregor, who I worked with, she intervened with them and she said, you're actually eating enough food, but all that's happening is your training fasted. And she would literally get them to add a snack in before their training session and their menstrual cycle came back. And so, yeah, I guess that's a bit of my story and an overview. And I guess now,
so I've got a couple of questions with that, Jen. Firstly, I'm not sure if you know the answer to this. In terms of the split men and women that get Reds, is it all women, majority women? Is it 50-50? That's question one. And then also the follow-up question that's related to that. In terms of, let's say, women that train, and there's different variations of that. You've obviously done a lot of work in the professional sporting industry. How, like, common is it for women not to have their periods if they're training at that level? Is it like, okay, that's just what we do at that level, or is that uncommon? And then probably same thing in the gyms. Do you see a lot of that as maybe even just personal trainers themselves, or those weekend warriors that train hard? So the questions are essentially, number one, is red split male and female? And then number two, how common is it amongst hard trainers, athletes, elite athletes, amateur athletes to miss their period?
So in terms of, like, the split and, like, prevalence rates, it's really challenging to get accurate prevalence rates in terms of Reds, because the methods to measure energy intake and energy expenditure are often frequently inaccurate. Just through data collection through your food diaries often present with inaccuracies, and energy expenditure is really challenging to measure. So to get an accurate prevalence rate for Reds is actually a real challenge in itself, but estimates in terms of, like, the sporting population, they have gone up to sort of 70-80% in some of our endurance, more physique, aesthetic weight sports. historically, we thought that in team sports they were a lot lower, but they're now also increasing. And there's a mixture of things at play here in terms of, yes, they've got high energy expenditures, but we've also got a society which is focused on image, physique, sort of bad diets, labels, paleo, keto, vegan, whatever you call it. And there's a lot of this filters in to people's lives. In terms of male and female, we know that females are at greater risk. And a lot of that does come from that pressure around a woman's body, and the sort of pressure that she feels to look a certain way. And we could go off on a tangent with that, but it's definitely more common in women than it is in men. But I do not want to sort of put men like to the side and say they don't get it. They definitely do. And I know quite a lot of men who have got it. It's just harder for men sometimes to recognize, like with a woman, one of the first symptoms, not always, but one of the first symptoms is a loss of a menstrual cycle. Now men need to look a bit more closely. So sometimes it's a loss of morning erections, but it's genuinely like low testosterone in men. So sometimes blood tests can be really useful for that. Gotcha. But there are other symptoms that can be like that we can look for. Now, in terms of the loss of a menstrual cycle around, was that more women in the gym, you said?
Probably or both. You could just probably, I don't know if you can give us both of those. Probably let's start with sport, because I'm guessing you might know those stats a bit better. And then maybe let's see how that relates to people in the gym or women in the gym.
Yeah. So again, kind of, it can be a little bit difficult to collect that data sometimes, just because of the nature of the taboo that's been around menstrual function. But we have had studies done where we've got up to like 60, 70% of our female athletes showing that they're amenorrheic and not having a cycle. And notoriously, if we go back in history, that's been normalized, you know, and even by coaches and trainers, it's been like, oh, it's a sign of your dedication to sport. And athletes don't seem to button eyelid because they're like, oh, that's a one less thing I've got to think about, but they just don't know the long-term implications, especially to bone. Now, in terms of where we're at with that now, it's becoming a lot more aware among the sporting population that actually this is a big concern and I've got to think about my athlete's health. And sporting organizations are actually now having to put policies in place and for sort of practices around that and to sort of make interventions in place so that we're making sure female athletes are maintaining a cycle. Now, in terms of the general population, I think the real sad thing is that they have literally zero support in this space. So their knowledge and awareness of, oh, if I lost my menstrual cycle being a problem is very little, unless they've got a predisposed bias interest like myself towards it. And I've got a number of gym friends who've like said to me of late, like, oh, I don't have my menstrual cycle. And I'm like going up in arms, like now, like trying to help them because I'm like, no, this is not okay. And they're like, oh, but the one I normally hear is, but I'm on the pill. And I'm like, no, like this is, and a number of, I've got some GP friends who have also said to me, I would put my patient on the pill. And this may go a little bit sciencey, but the reason we don't want them put on the pill is because it's has first pass effects on our liver, which basically suppresses something called IGF-1. And IGF-1 is really important for bone building. Whereas the transdermal estradiol patch that I was on, it doesn't have those effects because it goes straight into the bloodstream. It doesn't have to bypass the liver. So it doesn't impact IGF-1. But regardless, the main goal is to restore energy availability. Like that estradiol patch is used in severe cases as a support for those who are in that recovery phase and they're actually making progress, but it's not like a solution.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So a couple, there's a couple of questions I want to finish up with here, Jen, specifically around our personal trainers and their clients. So let's say, and I think there's two ways we can look at this. Let's say a client says to a trainer, something along those lines, hey, I'm training, you know, I've skipped my menstrual cycle. Is the trainer's responsibility there, hey, go and see your GP and just straight away there. Let's start with that one. If that happened, what's your suggestion for that scenario?
Yeah, so I would really like personal trainers to be upskilling their knowledge in the space of Reds, because if they're aware and understanding of why it's a problem, because what I don't want to happen is for them to just go, okay, if my client's not got a menstrual cycle, I need to refer them on. I want them to know why.
Yeah, gotcha.
Why is this an issue? Because if they don't know why it's an issue, they haven't got
the influence, right?
The influence, and also their values aren't going to be aligned with their client's best interest in returning.
Go see the GP. If they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. You know, but if you know the reasons why, you really got to do this.
Yeah. Like if that client hasn't had it, says, oh, I've not got a menstrual cycle, and then it suddenly gets revealed they've not had a menstrual cycle for 3 years or something, that can then change the whole way that they should be training them, because potentially they may have low bone density, and then we need to address the load that we're putting through them and making sure it's gradual in a way that it's not going to overload that bone density, that skeletal frame that may be weakened. So the first instance for me is, once they're upskilled on it, if someone confides in them and says, I've lost my menstrual cycle, I would be then saying to my client, okay, thank you for confiding in me. I'm a little bit concerned because there's a condition termed Reds. A little explanation about Reds, because then your client's already got an insight and going, oh, maybe I've actually got that. My advice to you would now be to go to your GP and say that you think you may potentially have this. And I think I may need to work with a sports dietitian, or if there's disordered, a psychologist on board, and basically telling the GP, because a lot of GP, unless you're lucky, a lot of GPs won't know what you're talking about, really. So sometimes it's a case of you actually having to go in and tell them what you need and what you want. And I'm a first culprit for that. Like with my story, I've literally had to go into GPs and be like, this is what I need. And can you just do it for me?
I do that as well.
So
You go. Keep going.
That's probably how I would ask the trainer to initiate that. But I would then, if the client was comfortable, as a personal trainer, I'd be saying, look, as your trainer, I want to make sure what I'm doing with you is appropriate and going to help you. And because I know not having a cycle is actually detrimental to your bone health, and I really need you to make sure that we know that your health is cleared, because if your health isn't cleared, then we can't move forwards. But the educating from the personal trainer to the client about Reds, we've also then got a domino effect that suddenly we're getting more awareness of Reds out there, because all of a sudden the client then goes home, reads around Reds, and then we're getting more insight. Like, I've spoken to so many of my, because I do some ocean swimming, so many of my ocean swim friends were coming to swimming and were like, oh, I'm just absolutely exhausted, I'm not sleeping well, I don't know what's wrong with me, I've never felt this way. And then I was like, oh, like, what's your eating patterns like? Oh, well, I don't tend to fuel before I swim, and I just have this. And I was like, hey, dude, like, I don't know if you've heard of this condition called Reds. And then I would explain. And he was like, wow, I think I might have that. And then I subsequently went and spoke to sports dietitians, and then once we got things in place, he came back and was like, everything's changed. Like, I've suddenly got the energy now, I've got my mojo back, I'm performing well. And so if you can catch Reds early, it can be quite quick to turn around.
Gotcha. Okay. For the other side to that, a client comes in who's previously had Reds. So, you know, they go and see a trainer, they fill out the pre-screening form, you know, have you had any conditions we should be aware of? You know, yes, I don't know what the correct wording is. I had Reds, I had an episode, whatever the wording is, it comes up on that form. What are some things a personal trainer, obviously everyone's different, but if you can give us some tips on what a personal trainer should ask, or what they should be wary of if they see that on a pre-screening form.
Yeah, so I think they need to know how long the person was in low energy availability, which leads to Reds. So they need to know how long they were experiencing Reds, because that could potentially give them some insight around bone. There may be a well-informed reason for that individual to actually have a bone density scan, which you can get here in Australia through your GP. You can just get referred, and Medicare covers that. And that can give us really good insight into that client's bone density. Because
that
if,
sounds
if
like
that
a
client had reds for a long period of
time. That sounds like a no-brainer, right?
So if that client's had reds for a long period of time, it's potentially likely that that would have affected their bone density. And if we know that, that's going to influence what the personal trainer is going to put in that person's program, because we need to, if that client's female, for example, and they've got their cycle back and they're eating really well, we're like, okay, we need to be including weightlifting or even like, so for hips, it's like side hopping, jumping, multi-directional movements. So we're stimulating that bone. And so it's going to be very specific to improve their bone density. We need to be mindful of how long that was. We also need to be mindful whether it was reds an unintentional issue. Was it they just simply didn't know how much they needed to eat, or was it combined with an eating disorder, disordered eating? Because again, we need to be very mindful of the language that we're using with that individual. Like, for example, if someone comments to me around my image, it's quite triggering for me, because I've had to experience some significant changes with my body, especially of late. My body's got a lot bigger than what it was when I was first in Australia. And that for me, when someone comments, even in a positive light, can be quite triggering. So sometimes even comments around someone's body, which are deemed positive comments, can be internalized in a negative way if they've had a history of an eating disorder. So again, it's understanding what did that red situation look like, and then having an understanding of how long have you been in kind of stable remission. Are you still in recovery? Do you still get treatment for this? Again, which will always impact, like if they're still in recovery from reds, they'll need to be mindful of the volume of training that that person's doing. And probably just having a general conversation around like, what's your behaviors like with your food intake? Like, I know we're mindful that personal trainers aren't there to prescribe nutrition to their clients, but just getting a feel for their relationship with food and their body. Because if it was a cause that was through disordered eating and eating disorders, again, like if we know a client's rocking up and they're still struggling in that space and they've not fueled for a session, that's a bit of an alarm bell for me. And so just encouraging and being like, hey, like, really want you to get as much as you can from this session, but I really would like it if you could fuel before it so that we can make sure that we're getting and like all those outcomes that we're really seeking from your training with me. So trying to frame it in like a really positive light with them and not scaring them about it, but just having a real understanding of where that client's come from with reds will really help inform the way that they'll train them, speak with them, nurture them, and like help them achieve their goals.
Yes, got it. Awesome. All right, well, Jen, there's some great tips there. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people listening to this, watching this, that are like, all right, this woman is cool. She knows her stuff. Her story's inspirational. I want to follow her. Where's the best place we go to follow you?
So mostly I'm Instagram. And my handle is Jens_little_world. And a lot of my stuff, I wouldn't say I'm a massive influencer out there at all. That's never been my intention. But what I do love to share is insights into the mind of someone with a lived experience. So firstly, if you haven't had a lived experience, it can help you to understand how we may process things in our mind. Other things that I like is I like people to see that I'm very vocal about my story, which has notoriously helped some other people reach out to me and say thank you, I've had the courage now to seek help, or and even just asking me advice on like, who can I go to? This is what I think I might have. So, and then some random stuff about me just living life, because why not?
Awesome. All right. I'll put those links in the show notes. Jen, that's pretty much all I wanted to cover today. Was there anything I should have asked you but forgot to, or anything you want to finish us off with?
I think for me, it's just always remembering that whenever you're working with someone, that's a human being first, And I think every personal trainer can agree, we want that human being to be able to remain active, fit and healthy for their whole life, not just for now. And so it's really thinking about long term. So what are we doing now? Is it supportive of their long term health? And if it's not, why are we doing it? Because I know it can be very easy to get caught in like this short term, oh, but I want to look this way for this moment, or I want to change my body right now. I'll think about my bones in the future. It's like, no, like think about it now, because otherwise you're going to end up in a messy situation like I've been in. It's not fun. So focus on that human being first who deserves health. Beyond, like health first, performance comes second. It's like make the cake, put the icing on after. So I guess that's probably what I'd like to leave you with. And just a big thank you for having me on.
No, you're welcome. I do have one final question. This is the $1 million question. I ask it to every guest. So
okay,
you can have $1 million in your bank account tomorrow, tax-free. You can do whatever you want with it, but you can never play cricket again, watch cricket again, or coach cricket again. Do you take the million?
No.
Yeah, okay. Not even, okay. Let me sweeten the deal. $2 million.
But it depends what I'm actually going to do with the money, actually, because if I was going to put that money into helping others who've been in my situation.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd take the money because I'd rather help those than me have that selfish thing of playing cricket again.
There you go.
Yeah, I would take the money.
Good answer. Awesome. All right, Jen, thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening. If you liked this show, share it with your friends, subscribe on iTunes, and leave us a 5-star review. For show notes and free training on how to grow your fitness business, visit www.fitnesseducationonline.com.au.
Are you a fitness professional looking to provide your clients with personalized meal plans? Check out Mealsy, the ultimate solution for creating custom meal plans in just a few simple clicks. With Mealsy, you can say goodbye to countless hours spent on meal planning. Our Australian meal planning web app is designed to save you time and effort, so you can focus on what really matters, your clients and their success. Mealsy provides you with a vast library of recipes, all created by nutrition professionals, from breakfast to dinner and everything in between. We've got you covered. Whether you want to create a custom meal plan tailored to your clients' needs or choose from our selection of ready-made meal plans, Mealsy has the flexibility to accommodate your preferences. So why waste precious time and energy creating meal plans from scratch? Let Mealsy do the heavy lifting for you, while you focus on delivering exceptional fitness services. Join the community of fitness professionals who have revolutionized their business with Mealsy. Visit our website at www.mealsy.com and sign up today. Mealsy, the smarter way to meal plan for fitness professionals.